Well, for a while I've been thinking about Kairos time. Kairos time is an appointed time. And if we're talking about in terms of being Christians, it's God's appointed time. Because Kairos is a Greek word. There's Chronos time, which is time that follows on in the timeline. And Kairos time is a whole lot of things where things come together and are forced into something happening at a given point of time. And often I think of Kairos time as being when a whole lot of good things come together. But when I was looking at it last week, I noted that a lot of what I saw was talking about when a whole lot of bad things came together to bring about some forced thing. And in God's time scale, sometimes he uses a whole lot of things that we wouldn't think of as being things that would be good for us, and he brings about something good out of the bad stuff. And that's part of that Kairos time concept too. In the book of Esther, chapter 4, in the second part of verse 14, it says there, who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this? And in that verse, I've heard it quoted in different situations. Who knows that you weren't put in that place for such a time as this? So we're going to look at the book of Esther today. We're going to hear the story of Esther, because I think that we can benefit from hearing how God has brought together a whole lot of things at once to bring about his plans and purposes. So, we are going to do a fair bit of reading if you want to follow it, and I'm reading from the NIV. And if you want an NIV, there's probably some up there. I'm not going to read the whole book because it's 10 chapters. So we're going to read the bulk of the story in the middle. But in the first chapter, we've got King Xerxes of Persia, I think. And he decides to show off and have a royal banquet and invite all the nobles and all the important people to come just so he can show off. He brings them from far and wide, from all these outlying places and all sorts of places. He wants to show off. He wants to show off how splendid he is. He wants to display his greatness, I guess. And all goes well until he's 7 days into the banquet and he decides that he would like to show off his wife, Queen Vashti. But she had other ideas and decided that she wouldn't come. So she refused to come to the king's banquet where he could show her off, because she was very beautiful. And I guess he wanted to show her off like another part of his possession. And she took exception to it. So starting from verse 13 in the first chapter, we see what happens when that takes place. Since it was customary for the king to consult experts in the matter of law and justice, he spoke to the wise men I'll just skip down to 15. He spoke to his wise men. And this is what they said. According to the law, what must be done to Queen Vashti, he asked. She's not obeyed the command of King Xerxes that the eunuchs have taken to her. Then Memucan replied in the presence of the king and the nobles, Queen Vashti has done wrong, not only against the king, but also against all the nobles and the peoples of the provinces of the king of Xerxes. For the queen's conduct will become known to all women, and so they will despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought down before him, but she would not come. This very day the Persian and Median women of the nobility have heard about the queen's conduct and will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. There will be no end of disrespect and discord, so that they were quite worried. that this incident was going to promote a women's lip thing, I think. And the women would do what they wanted to do and they wouldn't obey their husbands. So that caused quite a bit of upset. Therefore, if it pleases the king, let him issue a royal decree and let it be written in the laws of Persia and Media, which cannot be repealed, that Vashti is never again to enter the presence of King Xerxes. And also, let the king give her royal position to someone else who's better than she. When the king's edict is proclaimed through all this vast realm, all the women will respect their husbands from the least to the greatest. And all the nobles and all those people were pleased to hear that, because I guess they wanted to be in control, didn't they? They didn't want their women to be rebelling against them. So that's how they got rid of Queen Vashti. Later on, the king decided that he needed a new queen. So verse 2 of chapter 2, then the king's personal attendants proposed, Let a search be made for beautiful young virgins for the king. Let the king appoint commissioners in every province of his realm to bring all these beautiful girls into the harem at the citadel of Susa. So they went out and they brought in all these virgins that they found, so that the king could have his choice of them. Now there was in the citadel of Susa, this is verse 5, a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin named Mordecai, son of Jer, son of Shemai, son of Kish, who'd been carried into exile from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Now where else do we hear of Nebuchadnezzar? Daniel, right. And what do we know about Daniel? He and his friends were carried off into Babylon. And so here's Mordecai, is one of these people who's been brought into this exile, the same as Daniel, and different kingdom, I guess, to where Daniel was. Is that right? I don't know. A bit later. But anyway, it's all a result of the same thing, and that exile was there because the Israelites wouldn't obey God. They kept on sinning, they kept on failing, they kept on going back again and again and again until God said, well, I've had enough. You can go into captivity for 70 years and at the end of that time, then I'll restore everything to you because you might be ready to listen to me. And so this is in the part of the time that they're in exile. Now Mordecai, this is verse 7, had a cousin named Hadassah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father or mother. So somewhere in amongst all the exile, this person lost their parents. This girl was also known as Esther. And she was lovely in form and features, and Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother had died. So, like I said before about the Kairos time, it's a time when sometimes things that aren't good are part of the deal. And so it wouldn't have been much fun in this time being in the exile to start off with, but then there was all this upset, and I guess that's an example of it. The girl lost her parents for some reason or other, and so she was raised by her cousin. When the king's order and edict, this is verse 8, had been proclaimed, many girls were brought to the citadel of Susa and put under the care of Hegai. Esther was also taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Hegai, who had charge of the harem. The girl pleased him and won his favour. Immediately he provided her with beauty treatments and special food. He assigned her to 7 maids selected from the king's palace and moved her and her maids into the best place in the harem. So she got a good start right from the beginning. But Esther had not revealed her nationality and her family background. Because remember in the captivity, God told, you can read this in Jeremiah, God told the people, I think it's Jeremiah, told the people to go and live and marry because they were going to be there for a while and prosper the land, so they integrated somewhat. So it wasn't obvious then that Esther was a Jew. Mordecai had forbidden her to reveal her nationality. Every day he walked back and forth near the courtyard of the harem to find out how Esther was and what was happening to her. So he kept an eye on her from a distance. Before the girl's turn came to go to King Xerxes, she had completed 12 months of beauty treatments prescribed for women, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with perfumes and cosmetics, and this is how she would go to the king. Anything she wanted was given to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening she would go there and in the morning return to another part of the harem to the care of Shargaz, the king's eunuch who was in charge of the concubines. She would not return to the king unless he was pleased with her and summoned her by name. When the turn came for Esther to go to the king, she asked for nothing other than what Hegai, the king's eunuch who was in charge of the harem, suggested, and Esther won the favour of everyone who saw her. She was taken to King Xerxes in the royal residence in the 10th month, the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. Now the king was attracted to Esther more than any of the other women. She won his favour, and he set a crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And the king gave a great banquet, and he proclaimed a holiday throughout the provinces. So here's the new queen is Queen Esther, and he has no idea that she's a Jew. And still Mordecai stays close to make sure that that he knows what's going on. Verse 20, Esther had kept a secret of her family background and nationality just as Mordecai had told her to, and she continued following Mordecai's instructions as she had done when he was bringing her up. So she was, she respected this person who brought her up, and she continued to follow the traditions of her Jewish nationality. Now, during the time Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot and told Queen Esther, who in turn reported it to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the two officials were hanged on a gallows. And this was recorded in the Book of Annals in the presence of the king. Now, this is important because a bit later it comes to light. Now, at the same time as all this was going on, there was Haman. And Haman hated the Jews. And he wanted to get rid of them. And that was his great desire. So he found out that Mordecai wouldn't pay honour to him. So verse 3 of chapter 3. The royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, why do you disobey the king's command? That's to bow down to Haman, who is second in charge. Day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behaviour would be tolerated, for he had told them he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay honour, he was enraged. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing Mordecai. Instead, he looked for a way to destroy all of Mordecai's people throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. So he decided that he was going to get rid of the Jews. And he managed to get the king to make a law so that this was going to happen, that all the Jews would be, He plotted and planned, and he said that they their customs were different and they didn't obey the king's laws, which was not true, but that's what he told the king. And so he, if it pleases the king, he said, let a decree be issued to destroy the Jews, and I'll put 10,000 talents of silver into the royal treasury for the men who carry out this business. So Haman was actually a very wealthy man. So we're up to verse 10 in chapter 3. So the king took his signet ring from his finger and gave it to Haman. Keep the money, the king said to Haman, and do with the people as you please. So he set about going about to do this business of getting rid of the Jews. And I think that was about 10 months. It was over 10 months. He was sending out all these dispatches to all the regions, organising that on this particular day they were going to basically purge the Jews. Spurred on by the king's command, the couriers went out and the edict was issued in the citadel of Susa. The king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was bewildered. So chapter 4, Mordecai hears about all this and he goes about mourning and wailing. And then Esther heard about what was happening. So she sent to find out, why was Mordecai in this state? Because she heard nothing about this edict. She didn't know anything about what was going to happen to her people. Verse 4. Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her about Mordecai. She was in great distress. She sent clothes for him to put on instead of sackcloth, but he wouldn't accept them. Then Esther summoned one of the king's eunuchs to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So Hatak, the eunuch, went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in the front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the amount of money Haman had promised to pay the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He gave him a copy of the text of the edict for the annihilation, for killing them, which had been published, so that Esther would understand what was going to go on. So Esther found out all the information, and learned about everything that was going to happen to the Jews. Then she instructed the official to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king... I missed the bit about Esther. Mordecai wanted Esther to go to the king and make a petition against this horrible thing that was going to happen. And Esther became worried because unless the king invited her in, she wasn't supposed to approach him. And so she wasn't sure that if she went to him, that she would be accepted. Mordecai sent back a message to Esther in verse 13. Don't think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. So Mordecai is quite convinced God will take care of them. But you and your family will perish. And who knows, this is the verse I had at the beginning, but that you have come to a royal position for such a time as this. So Esther agreed to do all this. She asked Mordecai and all the Jews to fast for her, so that she would have the wisdom and God's insight to know what to do. When you have fasted, when this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. So she's turned around and agreed to go out and see if she can help her people. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. Now, here's what Esther did. Chapter 5. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. The king was sitting in his royal throne in the hall facing the entrance. When he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out the gold scepter that was in his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. She was invited in. It was okay. She wasn't going to be killed. Then the king asked, "What is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even half the kingdom it will be given to you." "If it pleases the king," said Esther, "let the king, together with Haman, come and have a banquet I have prepared for you." "Bring Haman at once," the king said, "so that we may do what Esther asks." So they went off and they had this banquet, and the king asked what was her petition. And he still was suggesting he'd be happy to give her half of the kingdom. So Esther says, "We'll come again tomorrow and we'll do this again." And they have another banquet. And then I'll answer the king's question, she says. So verse 9 of chapter 5. Haman went out that day happy and in high spirits because when he saw Mordecai at the king's gate and observed he neither rose nor showed fear in his presence, he was filled with rage against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. Now, he was feeling pleased because he was thinking about how he was going to destroy the Jews, and he was feeling pleased because the queen, apparently... it appeared to be giving him honour. She wanted him to come to the banquet with the king. He felt good about that. And so he was very pleased with his ideas about what was going to happen. Calling gathering together his friends and Zeresh, his wife, Haman boasted to them about his vast wealth, his many sons, and all the ways the king had honoured him, and how he had been elevated above the other nobles and officials. "And that's not all," Haman said. "I'm the only person Queen Esther invited to accompany the king to the banquet she gave, and she has invited me to go again tomorrow. But all this gives me no satisfaction as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting at the king's gate." His wife Zeresh and his friends said to him, "Have a gallows built 75 feet high and ask the king in the morning to have Mordecai hanged on it. Then go with the king to the dinner and be happy." This suggestion delighted Haman, and he had the gallows built. That night the king could not sleep. So here is the Kairos time. It's all just coming together. It's one pivotal time. That night the king could not sleep. He ordered the Book of Chronicles, the record of his reign, to be brought in and read to him. It was found recorded there that Mordecai had exposed the plot earlier about the king's officials who guarded the doorway and who'd conspired to assassinate him. "Oh, what honour and recognition has Mordecai received for this?" the king asked. "Nothing has been done for him," his attendants said. The king said, "Who's in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the palace to speak to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows. So he said, "Haman is standing in the court." "Bring him in," the king ordered. When Haman entered, the king said, "What should be done for the man the king delights, in whom the king delights to honour?" So here's Haman thinking that the king is talking about him. "Who is there that the king would rather honour than me?" So he answered for the king, For the man the king delights to honour, have him bring a royal robe the king has worn and a horse the king has ridden, one with the royal crest placed on its head. Let the robe and the horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honour and lead him on the horse through the city streets, proclaiming before him, "This is what is done for the man the king delights to honour." So Haman's thinking he's going to get the honour. This is in a VeggieTales thing, and it's really funny when you see this, but anyway. And I always think about it, it's just really funny. "Go at once," the king commanded Haman. "Get the robe and the horse and do just as you have suggested for Mordecai, the Jew who sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything you have recommended." So there it all comes back on Haman. Would have been quite horrible for him to have to go and do this when he's thinking it should be done for him. So Haman got the robe and the horse. He robed Mordecai and led him on horseback through the city streets, proclaiming before him, "This is what is done for the man the king delights to honour." Afterward, Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman rushed home with his head covered in grief, and he told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had happened to him. His advisers and his wife Zeresh said to him, "Since Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him. You will surely come to ruin." While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried Haman away to the second banquet Esther prepared. So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther. And as they were drinking wine on the second day, the king asked again, "Queen Esther, what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? Even up to half of the kingdom, it will be granted." Then Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favour with you, O king, if it pleases your majesty, grant me my life. This is my petition. And spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold for destruction and slaughter and annihilation. If we had been merely sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet because no such distress would justify disturbing the king." "King Xerxes," asked Queen Esther, "who is he? Who is the man who dared to do such a thing?" Esther said, "The adversary and enemy is this vile Haman." Then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. The king got up in a rage, left his wine, and went to the palace garden. But Haman, realizing that the king had already decided his fate, stayed behind to beg Queen Esther for his life. Just as the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining. The king exclaimed, "Will he even molest the queen while she's with me in the house?" As soon as the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs attending the king, said, "A gallows 75 feet high stands beside Haman's house. He had it made for Mordecai, who spoke up to help the king." The king said, "Hang him on it." So they hanged Haman on the gallows he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's fury subsided. So, after all that plot to get rid of the Jews, Haman ends up hanging on the gallows that he constructed to hang Mordecai. Because God is in control. And God was taking care of his people. And God had organized this Kairos time, this event. And it was part of the protection of his people. That even though he'd exiled them to countries far and wide because of the way they'd behaved, he still had the oversight of his people. He still gave them protection, and he wasn't going to give up on his people, and he wasn't going to let them be destroyed. And so out of this, Mordecai and Esther, Mordecai ended up with the king's signet ring. Mordecai ended up with the honour that Haman had had. And the queen ended up saving her people. And after that, the Jews celebrated this, it's called Purim, yeah. A festival of Purim. It was celebrated to remember this time. Now, when you think about this is Esther in the time of that captivity of the Jews, the exile of the Jews. You think about Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, all of those people who remained faithful to God. He did amazing things in the places where they lived because they remained faithful to him. And God was in control. He did not allow the wicked to prosper. And in Jeremiah 29:11, we have that verse, "For I know the plans I have for you," which was about those exiled Jews at the time. "Plans to prosper you and not harm you. Plans to give you a future and a hope." And we see in the story of Esther how God fulfilled those plans to give his people a future and a hope. He was not going to allow them to be annihilated. There, I can say it now. Now, God has a plan and purpose for us. And sometimes it involves us going through things we don't like. In Esther's case, she was raised as an orphan. And yet she ended up the queen of God used her to save her people. So just because we might not like much about what's going on about us doesn't mean God's not in control. It means that he's got a way of looking at things that's beyond our way of seeing. And he can bring together all of these different things that go on as part of our life to a point in time when we see how God is bringing about the ultimate plan and purpose he has for each one of us. For every one of us it's different, but it's still there nonetheless. God has got plan and purpose for each one of us. And we are in a place where he takes care of us even when we don't know it. And I just found that the story of Esther was really inspiring. That she didn't really have much of an idea of what she was doing or what she was in for. But she just basically did as she'd been brought up to do. She kept faithful to those things. She trusted Mordecai, who had brought her up. And she listened to him. She knew he was the person to trust. And she followed through with standing up for her people. And in the end, won a prosperity that was beyond anything she would have ever imagined. And prosperity doesn't have to be money. Prosperity is the richness of our life, the life that God's ordained for us. And that's what he has for every one of us, a richness of life. And if we are faithful to God, we will see how he brings that all together. So let me encourage you to trust God, to understand that he has plan and purpose, and to be willing to keep pushing on day in and day out with that faithfulness to God, because he will show us how it all comes together. In the end, might be sooner, might be later, he'll show us how it all comes together.